making TV special.
Dennis. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another special interview episode from Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. And it's the evening of May 27th, 2009, and on the line from Los Angeles is writer, researcher, musician, and author Alex Constantine. Thanks for taking the time to come on the show, man. I appreciate it.
And thank you. It's good to be here.
I was really glad to get in contact with you. The more I work on the site and the more I research parapolitics and alternative history, I kept finding myself coming back to some of your sites, alexconstantine.blogspot.com and The Blacklist, and we'll actually link all those up in the show notes for this. But I'm really curious, actually, how you got into this big, messy world.
Well, I've been doing this a long time. I started 21 years ago. And I came to Los Angeles from Ohio. I had worked for a tiny machine tool company out there, and they were laying off due to Japanese competition, and that company eventually sort of went under, was bought out by another concern, and it sort of disappeared off the face of the earth. But so I moved on to Los Angeles, and I came out here to write plays and movie scripts, that sort of thing. Also wanted to write fiction. That was my big ambition in life. And then I attended a trial in San Francisco because I started out here writing news stories, book reviews, play reviews, that kind of thing. And I went up to San Francisco to attend a murder trial and didn't know what I was really getting into here because it involved two Satanists who had kidnapped a homeless guy off the street. They took him home, shot him up with phenobarbital, and then tied him up and proceeded to carve on his body. And they tortured this guy all night long. They ate parts of his body. They carved a pentagram into his chest. And then the man bled to death, and then they left the body under a truck south of Market in San Francisco. And this was all shocking to me, and I attended the first day of trial and got sick, physically sick, after listening to all this. Went back the second day, heard the lead witness in the case, who was a kid by the name of Eddie, who had been staying at the house at the time of the murders, and he'd been asleep on the couch when it happened, but he woke up and witnessed part of what was going on there, and he eventually became the key informant for the local police department. So I grabbed this kid after he testified and talked to him for 3 days, took notes on everything he had to tell me, and it took me 7 years to actually answer all the questions that I had about this particular murder, because they led in all sorts of directions, including the Reagan White House, Bechtel Corporation, the CIA, who actually picked this kid off the street and interviewed him for 3 days, held him for questioning. And, of course, I wanted to know what in the hell the CIA had to do with all this and why they were interested in the murder and why there were political connections and corporate and so forth. So I come back to Los Angeles with all these questions, and then over the next month I spent $500 calling experts in the field, law officials, all sorts of people, anyone who was involved in Satanism and mind control. Eventually, that study in Satanism led me into fascism and Nazism, CIA mind control experiments, other types of human experimentation, the intelligence community in general, which is entirely criminalized, and I became obsessed. Didn't do anything, I guess, for about the next 10 years but research. I never watched television, didn't really go to movies. I didn't see a movie for 10 years. All I did basically was research, and that was because that sense of the critical sense that began in 1988 just never left me. I still have it to this day, as if knowing will somehow stop all this, and I've been trying ever since, you know, at least to do my part. So my key concern became fascism, especially after I discovered the work of Mae Brussel. And I ordered up $100 worth of her tapes back then, studied the tapes, went on the air on her radio station, took over her time slot, her old time slot, at a station called KAZU, which is still there, but now it's not independent. It's owned by NPR. And for 5 years I did that until the CIA grabbed me and tortured me and forced me off the air. A mail would show up torn open. I was followed everywhere I went, photographed. I had stalkers, all sorts of things going on. And none of that was going to deter someone as obsessed as I was, and I'm still doing it today. And if you visit, I have 4 different websites where I post information and write articles, and I'm still doing it.
So I didn't know you were originally from Ohio and maybe had a little bit of a theater background. I'm from West Virginia and have a little bit of a theater background. I've done a bit of sound design and a little bit on stage, but I've been out in Portland for about 4 years now.
Well, I was I studied literature for 6 years. I taught literature for a while, and that was basically my key concern, including drama, of course. And now it's politics, and the interesting thing is that I get the same sort of fulfillment from doing what I do now as I did writing plays and fiction.
Absolutely. That's, again, I kind of can echo those sentiments. I was more involved in theater and sound design, but my sort of awakening event was, of course, 9/11. But mm-hmm. I do come from a background of Southern Baptist upbringing. I went to the Emmanuel Baptist Church till I was 15 years old. And
good
so,
God.
Yeah. And so I'm familiar with the background of some of these, the areas of whether it's Satanism or mm-hmm. sinister forces within the music and the media. So again, you know, when you're a little kid and they're showing you and playing, you know, playing Queen backwards for you and telling you where the satanic messages are and talking about the movies, all it did was make me want to get involved in music and the movies. So
well,
once I go ahead.
I dug into the very hardcore stuff, and basically what I was concerned with was murders, how the intelligence agencies not only use satanic cults as fronts for mind control, but also how they use them to kill. And if you study the Son of Sam murders, for instance, you'll find that there were particular victims that they wanted to get rid of. And when I use the word they, I'm talking to higher-ups in the organization. These tended to be very rich people in New York State who were calling the shots. so to speak. And those people are still around, so I traced their movements, and Son of Sam was one case that I followed. I mean, there were connections to the Manson murders, also intelligence and Nazi connections. And, you know, I take, as this information comes along day by day, I assemble these things and put them together. Now, you were interested in 911. You were talking about your own research in that. 911 has deep ramifications. You said before the program that you wanted to talk about Flight 3407, which is a perfect example. Because 3407 also has connections to 911 and to the current wars going on around the world. There were four people from Northrop Grumman on board, and several of them were involved in electronic warfare operations over in Europe. And you may remember there was a crash that took place within a week or so of the Buffalo crash, and that was in Amsterdam. And there were Boeing employees who were killed in that crash, and they were also involved in this electronic warfare program that's being sold to Turkey and to Europe. And the reason that we're gearing up this whole program is because we're making a trade. In exchange for the electronic warfare technology that we're giving away to Europe, they're going to be helping us in operations in Afghanistan, and it's a quid quo pro. So we have four different employees of Northrop Grumman involved in this electronic warfare stuff who die in Buffalo on February 12th, but then we go back to November, we find that the founder of Northrop Grumman Amherst Systems near Buffalo, where these other four were employed, also died in the plane crash. And this struck a house 2 miles away from the runway. It was a Cirrus 22, had trouble approaching the runway, engine trouble, and crashed in a driveway just 2 miles away from the airport. Now, this was a guy by the name of Donald A. Hess, founder of Northrop Grumman Amherst Systems, who died in that previous plane crash. And he has an interesting history also, because he was head of the local conservative party in Buffalo, New York. And that is to say that the Republican Party wasn't right-wing enough for this guy. He has to be the head of the conservative party in Buffalo just to let everyone know how far right he is. He's central to this electronic warfare program that I was discussing. But it's interesting that he was also on the board of directors of Hoffman Woodward Medical Center, where they did studies founded by leading pharmaceutical companies, who I'll describe later, where they did studies on the transfer of disease from animals to human beings. And if you think of this in terms of the timeline leading up to the swine flu outbreak in Mexico, these crashes happened just before all this begins to take place. Those studies were founded by Merck and a company called Invacare, which turns out to be extremely interesting, as well as everything else that I'm going to discuss here. The 3407 crash occurs on February 12th, 7 miles away from the airport. And on board, you have a number of people who have military connections. A lot of these people who died in this plane crash were in the Army Reserves, the Air Force Reserves. Some of them were involved in intelligence operations. And if you take the sum total of these people on board the plane, you've got to say this is a statistical oddity, and it just couldn't be that these many people with these connections on board one airplane. This does not happen by accident. In order to cover it all up, we go to the NTSB, and we find a guy by the name of Mark V. Rosinker, who has no background at all in investigating airplane crashes, because he was G.W. Bush's military liaison to the Pentagon before Bush appointed him to be chairman of the NTSB. Now, you want someone in that position who knows about plane crashes, you know, is perhaps a pilot himself who knows planes inside out, knows what he's doing. This guy is military, and his background is in public relations, and he's totally out of his element. And that's why we get all sorts of BS explanations for the 3407 crash, and there's been a whole series of them. Now, any questions so far?
Well, I wanted to point out the part that I think that originally caught my attention, and now as I'm thinking about it, perhaps that was the best trick, in a way. Beverly Eckert was one of the folks that died on
there's
the crash.
There's a 911 connection.
She had previously, 7 days prior, met with Obama, as well as some of the other 9/11 victims' family members, some of the Jersey girls, as well as, I believe, some of the USS Cole family members.
That's right.
And this meeting,
and she's pushing for an investigation of 911, right?
And from at least the way that I saw it painted, from what I could gather from the meeting, it almost sounded as if the families were all sort of mollified and, oh, well, Obama, he's going to do a good job, that they almost just kind of seemed to be placated for the time being.
Well, I wouldn't blame her for that. I mean, that was the general attitude.
So now, 7 days later, 7 days later, this one of the 9/11 widows, she dies in the crash of Flight 3407, which, as we said, was February 12th.
Right. Her husband was Sean Rooney, who died in the crash, or on 911.
Mm-hmm. And so,
in the 98th floor of the South Tower.
But now, as we see all of these other connections start to spill out, whether it's the private military contractors or the pharmaceutical interests and swine flu and what have you, it almost maybe seems that Beverly Eckert is the sort of attention-getting thing that maybe well-meaning folks like myself, you know, but small bloggers might focus on the 9/11 angle and perhaps not go deeper into the story.
Well, I think that's partly true, that there are other connections that were hidden because Beverly Eckert was on the front page. But she was also pushing not only for an investigation of 911, but she wanted exhaustive intelligence reform legislation. She had been a part of drafting legislation that was stalled and killed in the House by Republicans. So I believe that she really is integral to all this, but she is the most recognizable figure. There were others also, a woman by the name of Allison DeForhey, who worked for Human Rights Watch, and she was revered by liberals for her work on Rwanda. But if you look at her work closely, you'll find that she censors out all information leading to Northrop Grumman and Halliburton and other contractors who were working in Rwanda at the time and stoked up the genocide. And at the same time, she was feeding information to the CIA. So it looks to me that she was a plant, right? And that she was widely celebrated because the CIA-controlled press made her a celebrity, and made her, and gave her the respect that was given to her by liberals through the publicity. But at the same time, she was two-faced and working for the intelligence community.
And those,
I believe they wanted her out of the way for some reason, because when I look at the passenger list and then study the way that these people ended up on that airplane, most of them were manipulated. And I've seen this before. There was a previous plane crash just 2 years ago in Lexington, where half the people on board had top security clearances, and they came from different directions, different walks of life, different connections. But many of those, too, were connected to 911. And these were people that the CIA wanted out of the way. And I think you have a similar situation here, a mass assassination, where perhaps a dozen people on board were manipulated to be on that plane, and then the plane was sabotaged so it would crash. And you can go down the passenger list. There's a guy by the name of John Fior, who was in the Air Force Reserves, and he worked in support of the Iraqi elections. He also worked as a counterterrorist, and he made the statement to friends that the work he was doing there would be historical, right? He felt that he was doing important counterterrorist work over there. But it looks like, along with these other people, he was wanted out of the way. There's another woman by the name of Maria Julia Abraham. She worked for Invacare, which was, this is the company that was funding the transmission, disease transmission studies that were done at Hoffman Woodward under Donald Hess. And she also was in the Army Reserves, And it turns out that Invacare was one of the top 10 donors to Tom Daschle,
who just missed his chance to be the Health and Human Services Secretary.
Yeah, supposedly a Democrat, but he was a dark force in Congress if you studied his resume at all.
And so it's interesting, too, as if we're talking about pharma bioterror connections, is he got some of the anthrax in 2001.
Yeah, that's right. It looks to me like this particular medical center, run by this far-right conservative who had his own party in Buffalo, had deep intelligence connections. That's probably why he ended up as the CEO of Amherst Systems under Northrop Grumman, and it's also the reason that he's dead today. You had a guy by the name of George Abu Karem, who comes from the South Lebanon Army, where he also had, looks to me, deep intelligence connections. And he was working as a security guard in Buffalo, which tells me that things were too hot in Lebanon. And he came to work for the intelligence services here. Another guy by the name of Kevin Johnston, who worked for a company called Henkel Technology. And I got into the history of Henkel Technology, and what I discovered is that Henkel is based in Germany, and the major investor in a company called Degussa, which made poison gas in the Nazi regime, as did IG Farben. Excuse me. And I have a clipping on Degussa from about 1989, where it was reported in the LA Times that they were a manufacturer of ecstasy that was being distributed in the United States. So now this is extremely interesting because Kevin Johnston was on the board of directors. And if anybody knows what's going on at Degussa Corporation, it's the directors who are making the policy decisions. And the Nazi history is interesting in light of its connections and overlaps with the CIA. And then you had a woman by the name of Nicole Korsakowski, who had ties to the Parmalat scandal. And this is interesting, too, because she was working for Barclays in New York. And Barclays certainly went through a great deal of trauma recently with the bailout and so forth, and after the dust settled, it turned out that Barclays had a major interest in a bank that's owned by Mahfouz, a guy by the name Mahfouz, who's bin Laden's father-in-law, right? And he's still running banks, and Barclays owns the bank that he runs. So now you've got a connection
to the money
between Barclays was dirty to begin with, but now they're tied in with the BCCI people. And if you recall, BCCI was a company that was laundering dope money for the CIA. They had been involved in child pornography, all sorts of dirty things. And now these people are tied they're tied into other banking interests here in the United States. Especially Barclays, and now the Saudis own something like 70% of that investment house. None of this is reported in the newspaper, so you got to dig for this stuff. So I got looking into this crash from all sorts of different angles, and I discovered that a so-called expert who's being retained by the legal firms representing families in the Flight 3407 crash, and this is an aviation expert, so-called, by the name of Randall Brink, who is on the internet. He's supposed to be an expert in aeronautics, and his expertise comes from owning three different companies: U.S. Turbojet, another one called Euro American Aero, and then an entertainment company in Los Angeles called Davenport Entertainment. So I looked up these three companies. Euro U.S. Turbojet never got off the ground. It was just an idea. Euro American Airlines does not exist. And Davenport Entertainment, I called up Los Angeles Information and asked them for Davenport Entertainment in Culver City, where they're supposed to be located, and turns out that there is no Davenport Entertainment. It doesn't exist. that means this aviation expert who's telling the families what happened in that crash is a complete fraud.
And so if his companies are fake, then what else is fake? So what it seems like we've now connected the money to the bioterror, to the military, and they all seem...
logical. I knew what I would find as soon as I looked into it, that any aviation expert who's going to testify and tell and explain to the families what happened and to the world is going to be a complete fraud, and of course this guy is.
And didn't we see the military get involved in the official story even of JFK Jr., when his plane went missing, and at some point...
His plane was sabotaged. This goes on a lot more than people realize.
It's kind of amazing the amount of plane crashes. So if in Flight 3407 we have the elimination of folks connected to 9/11, military, private military contractors, the pharmaceutical industry, and on, is this a prep for something? So when you connect swine flu with the bailouts and the Econo crash, and all the talk and all the prep about cybersecurity and hacking the grid and the power grid, is this a massive prep and cleanup operation?
Well, the power grid thing that you're talking about, that is to set it up so that they have public and congressional support to pour money into the cyber things they do. And I don't think it's really going to go for that. They're going to use it for something else. And what that something else is, I don't know. But I don't really believe that's it. They're not worried about the grid.
I suppose my worry sometimes is that they'll use a generated, you know, sort of E-9-11 where some massive event happens, and then, of course, they use that to clamp...
If it is, it's going to be orchestrated at this end. It's not going to be terrorists getting in and hacking away. It's just never happened. The only time that it has happened is when the CIA set it up for the sake of reporters.
So the latest that I've really seen concerning the Flight 3407 was when they had the recent hearings. And we have the parents of Rebecca Shaw, the co-pilot, I believe. You have her parents, or at least her mother, saying that basically it sounds like they're trying to pin all this on her.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they're doing. They're trying to pin it on the pilot.
Pilot error.
And it's easy to get on the bandwagon once you've read a newspaper story talking about the hearing, and they talk about the ice on the wings. That's where they went for a while, but that one fell apart. So they moved on. Now they're trying to blame the pilot. They said Rebecca Shaw was fatigued. So then what happened is you had a whole flurry of newspaper articles and radio reports about pilot fatigue and so forth. And this is all mind control stuff, repetition of the message. And they want you to believe that Rebecca Shaw was fatigued, but according to her own brother, she wasn't fatigued. She went to work. She was fine, right? It's an excuse. They also say that there was chit-chat as the plane approached the five-mile marker. Now, the problem is that there was no chit-chat within 5 miles of that crash, right? There was a little commentary in the cockpit about ice on the wings, and that was it, right? And there was no time for chit-chat because this is the way it happened. The plane approaches the airport, 7 miles from the airport or so. It goes haywire, right? It's like a rocket sled ride with the plane tumbling and turning. Right, and there's no chance for the pilot to do anything to correct what's happening. They were supposed to be calm, and they were supposed to push the stick back and push the nose down and so forth. There was no time for that, because at one point, as it approaches the airport, that plane just went crazy, right? And there was no coming out of it. That plane was sabotaged. It wasn't ice on the wing. It wasn't chit-chat. It wasn't the pilot's salaries. It wasn't fatigue, right? That plane was sabotage, and that's something they've never even mentioned. They've never even said they ruled it out, but they never looked at it. It never became a focus of the investigation because Mark Rosenker, G.W. Bush's PR guy and liaison to the military, doesn't know anything about plane crashes, but he knows a lot about cover stories, and these aren't even good cover stories. That's why the parents are just screaming bloody murder, because they know that their kids are being scapegoated.
So is it expected to end in a way with these congressional hearings, that it's sort of, you know, a wiping of the hands and case closed?
Well, it was an NTSB hearing, and it is pretty much case closed. Once they've put this out in this heavy publicity, it's locked in everybody's mind, and that's the official explanation. And the families, they really work the families over psychologically, and they'll have the families believing what they want them to believe. I've seen this happen time and again.
That's what I was just about to say, and I think, unless you have any other things to add on Flight 3407, I think that we've mentioned enough things that we could probably touch on intelligence connections.
One more thing I'd like to mention is that, now I told you I've looked at this from every direction, you find about what you expect to find, which is the intelligence, the CIA manipulating the whole thing. Now, the families are going to be suing the airport and the airline. And those cases are going to be heard by a guy by the name of Judge William M. Scretney, who was appointed by G.H.W. Bush. He's on the Ford Foundation. And if you look up his name in relation to the Leonard Peltier case, you'll find that he withheld government documents that could have cleared Leonard Peltier. So this case is being handled from every direction. The press is reporting false news. The NTSB is planning cover stories. It's handled legally. And then you've got me out there crying bloody murder in the midst of all this. And no one's going to pay attention to me because they trust their authorities. And their authorities have been leading them down a rosy path for the last 50 years. Okay, now we can move on.
I suppose the way I was kind of tracking this story, and again, there's so much news on so many levels that I tend sometimes, you know, in just trying to get things covered on the website and just add links and at least get some kind of information out there. This crash seemed to happen around the same time I really seemed to be tracking, one, what, I don't know if you're familiar with Lauren Coleman, calls the copycat effect. He's the author of the book of the website of the same name. And just these sort of mass shooters, the murder suicides, and just the seeming general level of chaos that's kind of...
kidnapping.
All of it.
Mm-hmm.
Animals attacking, and... So is it... I mean, in a way, it is the war on the consciousness. And in a way, it is...
It's to keep us in a state of fear.
What you call... psychic dictatorship.
Well, yeah, that's right. That's what all that's about. And while Obama's in office, this is going to go on and on.
Okay, so now we've mentioned Obama, and we've seen what hasn't changed. And the only thing that sometimes gives me a little bit of hope is that hopefully the well-meaning left are already realizing that they've been screwed. Perhaps it's much, much too late for that, but where do you see us going under the new change agent?
I think we're going to head in exactly the direction that was established by the Bush regime. I think we're going to see very little variation. He's already increased military budget. He's making excuses for torture. He's holding back on evidence. After the CIA burned photographs, and you know what's in those photographs? At Abu Ghraib, you had children who were raped in front of their parents. Let's see those photographs, right? Let's get that out there. Let's get that information out there. It doesn't come. All you hear about is waterboarding. And there's a lot more to this than waterboarding. That's just the beginning. The CIA did not just begin waterboarding. They've been doing it since the Vietnam War. Jimi Hendrix died with his lungs full of red wine. You can call that a form of waterboarding. They just held him down and forced red wine down his throat until he drowned. His stomach and his lungs were full of wine.
Now,
that was waterboarding taken to the extreme.
That kind of brings me to where I maybe also wanted to touch on. And I have been reading your book that's called The Covert War Against Rock. And this may seem out of left field, but it, in a way, kind of it signifies something to me. Today in the news, we had the big story break that AT&T perhaps helped rig the American Idol vote. Now, that may seem like a ridiculous thing to bring up, and in a way it is, but it's had me thinking about what in the past were legitimate artists with a real pertinent message, and not only that, an amazing amount of power with the mass amounts of people, especially in the cases of folks like John Lennon or even Tupac Shakur. Have we gotten to the point now where we don't really have outspoken rock stars to get rid of anymore because they're all complete corporate pop idols?
Well, they made a big mistake back then. That's because the word revolution became current, well, became widespread, and these guys talked openly about political revolution. And those were at the top of the list to be eliminated because if, let's say that you're working for the FBI and you hear these guys out there talking about overthrowing and killing you and so forth, you're not going to like it and you're going to do something about it. And it just happened to be those particular rock celebrities who were talking about overthrowing the government who died, if you notice, John Lennon among them. But you also had Tupac Shakur, who was a Black Panther. He had his own little Black Panther party. His parents were Black Panthers, and 28 of the Black Panthers use that word a lot, too. And they all ended up dead because FBI and local police slaughtered 28 Black Panthers. Tupac makes 29. You also had, just at random, you had, let me see here. Remind me of some of the people in the book.
Well, there's, I know the one that, of course, kind of caught my attention. I was always the biggest NXS fan. And so I've always found the death of Michael Hutchence very strange.
That's an incredible story. Michael Hutchence didn't have a dime to his name, right, when he died. And that seems impossible until you look into it and find out that his accountant was working for the mafia. And that all his funds were being passed off to the mafia, while on paper, Michael Hutchence was worth millions of dollars. Actually, when you got down to it, all he had was the money in his pocket that his accountant gave him, and that's what he was worth when he died. So the mafia stole all his money and all his property. He thought that he owned a bowling alley in Australia. And then it turns out that that bowling alley was being used to refine heroin, and that heroin was distributed throughout Europe. Michael Hutchence didn't know anything about this, but I think he was catching on, and that's about the time he was found hanging from his doorknob.
Jesus, with of course, now the official story was that it was autoerotic asphyxiation gone wrong, but his hand was busted, and
it makes him look silly and thoughtless and stupid.
Mm-hmm.
He ends up dead, and of course, when they kill these people, they end up smeared at the same time. Supposedly, Jimi Hendrix died of a heroin overdose. That's so we blame the victim.
Mama Cass choked on a ham sandwich.
Yeah, there you go, see?
And of course, and again, those are the ones that I know. I, you know, growing up, didn't know anything about it, but you just hear that, and you take that as that's what it is. Choked
little
on a ham sandwich.
Little known fact, Mama Cass was going to run for Congress.
So, again, going to become even more politically active.
That's right. So, you know, they didn't like her. They don't like these rock stars in general. They don't like their lifestyle. They don't like their hair. They don't like their, you know, their habits, their living habits. But especially, they don't like being threatened by them.
And there's no other, I think, form of, you know, whether it's celebrity or artist or idol or whatever you want to call it, that has the amazing power that musicians do.
That's right. I mean, one Bob Marley is worth 1,000 propagandists.
Absolutely. So, do you see, I guess I in a way, maybe looking on your comment on the current sorry state of popular media, but is it I think it probably is. Maybe that's the answer to my own question. The American idolization, it is the psychic dictatorship. It's you're willingly participating in your own manipulation. Your arm's not being twisted, but you sit down however many times a week it is and check out the latest show. Now, with this big scandal about AT&T maybe rigging the vote, let's see if the outrage, you know, is half as large as perhaps when our elections. Yeah.
They don't get mad about anything else, and that's conditioning. But yeah, they'll get mad about things like that.
That ultimately, yeah, exactly. And you'll get more people involved in something like that that would never get actively involved in politics.
That's right. But they keep them, you know, I can see it. I mean, the public is confused. Let's take the Kennedy assassination. I go to the bookstore, I'm going to find 15 different books on the Kennedy assassination, pointing fingers in all different directions. But I think if you took a poll, you'd find that the current consensus is that the mafia did it. Now, if you, just that alone is to say the intelligence services did it, because the CIA's been working with the mafia since World War II, right? The OSS was tied in with the mafia to sabotage Mussolini and so forth. And that was called Operation Underworld, and it's still with us, and the mafia begins in Washington, D.C. But, you know, the public believes that it had something to do with the mafia, you know, some of these Castro people and so forth. And you look at the History Channel, that's what they're telling you, that's what the books are telling you, that's what the Internet's telling you, and that's totally false. The mafia was pretty much on the periphery of the whole thing, and they were only used as pieces on a chessboard. Because the two generals who conceived the Kennedy assassination started up as soon as Kennedy became president. That means that the motive was not what Kennedy intended to do in Vietnam. It was not what he intended to do with the CIA. It was the fact that he became president, that he won the election over Richard Nixon. You see my point?
Absolutely.
It was because he gained power that he had to go, and the chess pieces started to move as soon as he became president. That means Oswald gets sent overseas, a lot of false leads are planted, and if you try to follow up on those leads, they go in seven different directions. All of them seem plausible, but there's only one path that puts it all together for you, and that's if you begin with the Minutemen, the local Minutemen, like the Birch Society, the Liberty Lobby, in coordination with the CIA, and then you get down to the bolts, the nuts and bolts of the assassination. The rest of it is just misdirection. But the public picks up, you know, one book, they watch one TV show, and they watch another, and they end up totally confused, and that's by design.
I definitely believe so much of it is by design. I know I often refer to, I've always just, the whole thing that turned me on to researching 9/11 and thus down the rabbit hole of everything else was, I just wanted to see the video of the plane hitting the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. And if they would release that, then people like me would have to shut up, because maybe they showed, and maybe, who the hell knows, something hit it. And maybe I was wrong.
Right.
But to not focus on that, and that's the thing, so many of the peripheral events are the real kind of window dressing. I believe, in a way, that the collapse of the towers themselves are kind of the big eye-catching thing that all the conspiracy theorists talk about, and even when people who are, you know, so-called 9/11 truth and all, that's basically what they focus on. But I think that that is the magician's baton twirling around, while, again, the more sinister forces are perhaps at work below.
Well, it's left enough questions that it's bred a whole generation of researchers. I was glad to see that happen.
Okay, and I was going to actually broach that topic, because I'm definitely one of those. I'm one of those, you know, tons of people who got turned on to 9/11 at the same time the internet and podcasting and websites and all these things became virtually free to do.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
it's...
You know, there weren't many of us out there, really, before 9/11, and now there's, like, thousands out there. And I'm so impressed with the work they're doing.
Well, that's great to hear, because I sometimes worry that with so many people sometimes just throwing shit up against the wall and see what sticks.
Well, there's some of that.
There is some of that.
The way I experienced it, it takes about 3 years before you have a foundation for this work, and that's 3 years of hard labor, right? Before you're really ready to start doing this in any sort of public capacity. And one reason for that is because they put so many landmines in the road. You know, the stuff they call conspiracy theory is mostly planted information. That's coming from intelligence fronts.
And that, I feel, is the potholes and the traps of the UFOs and the chupacabras, yes, and all of that. And also, I think, all of the infighting. And right. I like this radio host and all that garbage that I personally don't get involved in. Exactly. Not a member of any group. I do this by myself.
Exactly. But and I think there's a tendency to latch on to experts. And that's where people go wrong, because they latch on to the wrong people. They find Lyndon LaRouche or the Burt Society, and they start believing that, and it takes them a while to work their way out of that maze. Then they find the next one, they have to work out of that maze, and then eventually they're thinking for themselves. And you'll find them passionate about their beliefs at every step along the way. And so it's, they're you know, they're an irate bunch of people to begin with. They don't like being lied to. They're very bitter about what's happening. They want to put a stop to it, but it takes a lot of work and a lot of dedication to really start putting things together as they should be reconstructed. And you know, people start right away. They get on the internet, they start gathering information, and, you know, they believe in what they're doing, and it may take some time to work out of it, but they move on to the next thing and the next thing, and then eventually they get there. It helps. I found Mae Brussel a big help, because she takes all that crap out of it and gets down to the intelligence services, their interactions with the Nazi Party after the war, bringing the Nazis into the United States in scientific and technological capacities, also psychiatric. And she does it all in a documented fashion. She knows the ropes, and she never gets fooled. So, if, you know, listen to some Mae Brussel on the internet, you know, whenever you get, you know, a compulsion to learn, and, you know, start from there. At least, you know, she's a good guide that can get people started. A lot better than most of the people I find on the internet.
Is it the nexus point, the World War II, CIA, OSS, Nazi? It seems that so many things point back to that being the sort of ground zero, the sort of festering wound that started so much.
No, actually, it starts way before that. Let's back up all the way to the beginning here, and I can get to it pretty quickly, and then you can see how it fits historically. This all begins really with the rise of industrialization. You have a middle class who feels sorry for the lower classes because they're being subjected to all kinds of horrific conditions in the factories. And they start to, that begins, that's the origin of liberalism. And then you have another class, that's the managers and people working for the industrial class, the ruling class, whose sympathies are with their leadership. And then you have the middle class that goes on to start utopian societies, eventually a communist party. And in the 1920s, you have Mussolini comes along because he's recruited by the ruling class, who are fearing the rise of communism. And that's an authoritarian system, and they feel that they need a much more powerful authoritarian system to counter the rise of communism in Europe. So they initiate a prescription from Mussolini called fascism, which had to do with the corporations who are run by the ruling class, owned by the ruling class, in league with the government in order to stop communism from getting a foothold anywhere in the Western world. So that's where it really begins in the 1920s with Mussolini and the rise of Hitler, both of whom are Templars for the wealthy. The same with the Nazi Party and fascism throughout Europe. It was being financed and organized by the rich, and you had the same in the United States. You had fascists there as well as in Europe, and those fascists were working for the industrialists. Henry Ford, AT&T, the Rockefellers, the Bush family, and so forth. they're all investing in fascism, and we're stuck with it today. So that's really where it begins in the 1920s.
So
the fascism that we're contending with, not so much the OSS and the CIA or the Nazis, right, or the military, it's fascism, which is, as Mussolini defined it, the corporations working in an unrestricted fashion to rule over our lives.
And I think for me, when we look at sort of, you know, the warnings of where it looks like we're going, I know many, many years ago, I always kind of figured that the sort of Brave New World scenario was far more likely than the boot on the face of 1984. That they would get us, like Huxley said, to love our servitude.
Well, the Nazis devoted 40% of their efforts to propaganda. And propaganda is a form of mind control. They use the same techniques. So, yeah, we have a populace here who has their beliefs, and it's all illusion. You know, what they believe is false.
But it does seem like they're prepping us for sort of another big kind of change or a big kind of event, in a way.
I think it's possible.
But perhaps that's just my own feeling that there's some sort of other shoe to drop, the next 9/11, I suppose.
We're in the midst of an orchestrated economic collapse right now.
Mm-hmm.
The bailout money is actually being thrown over the fence, you know, by the corporations to the corporations.
And they're not telling us, we're not allowed to know where it goes.
And as we don't understand this any better than we understood the SNLs, which was a vast CIA mafia operation. That wasn't reported in the daily newspapers, and the average person has no conception of what happened. But that was CIA and the mafia looting all these SNLs across the country. And that's how they operate. They've been doing this for a long time. And getting away with it because they have the press to cover for them.
You know,
that's the only way they can get away, say, with the Kennedy assassination. And that's probably the best argument for the mafia didn't do it. Didn't kill Kennedy because they don't have the power to control the media.
And
CIA has that power because they began in 1947 to do just that under something called Operation Mockingbird. And that was making connections between the CIA and magazines like Newsweek, Time Magazine, Reader's Digest. And all these corporations had already been doing the fascist propaganda under the aegis of the corporations, but then the CIA stepped up and made it an official intelligence function. So if you pick up, say, a copy of Reader's Digest, you're going to find, you know, the average articles, but in every issue there's one or two articles that are planted by the CIA. And you'll find that in just about every major publication around the world.
Now, we had the recent death of Tom Braden, I believe was his
Tom
name.
Braden. Supposedly a leftist. He worked for the CIA. He had his start breaking up labor unions in Europe, and then he becomes a spokesman for the left, or the controlled left.
And that's what it seemed to me, is that in looking at it, he's credited of, you know, the creator of Crossfire, which popularized the, you know, the conservative versus the liberal. And in a way, it seemed that was his CIA gig, was to set up this sort of fake left-right dichotomy.
Right. And that's all the media does. I mean, you turn on television, what do you find? Programs on aliens, you know, Fox News, which is a CIA operation. You can't get away from it. It's anywhere you turn in the major media, the CIA is there. And I can promise you that. Get on the internet, do the research, you'll find it.
Well, man, I really appreciate you taking this time. I know we've hit so many topics that I'd love to spend more time on, and hopefully some point we could definitely do this again. Do you want to leave any parting words of warning or wisdom for the folks out there listening?
Basically, I say it's time for discipline. That American Idol is crap. What they're serving up in the media is just garbage. So tune it out. Even the politicians, don't listen to what they say. Just watch what they do, and you know, have start digging in. That's all I have to say.
Well, and I think for me, I feel like the media is the one thing that they use against us that we can actually use back against them. I can't beat them with the money, or I can't maybe beat them with the guns or military power, but we have media, and I'm talking to you through my computer right now, and in a short time, hopefully a lot of people are going to be able to hear this.
Well, it's let me give you a tip on what to look for. I was talking about planted stories. It's basically the whole thing. Most newspapers have real reporters. They go out and they gather real news stories, and some of those will be scandalous. They'll expose government scandals and so forth, although they try to keep that to a minimum. But it's the planted story you have to watch for, the front page story that finds WMDs in Iraq, right, the lettuce into the war. It's the planted stories you watch for. If you want legitimate information, it's there in the media to be culled, right? But you have to know who the propagandists are, and you get a good sense of this after a while, who to stay away from and where to find the legitimate information. And one place is Alex Constantine's Blacklist. That's the first blog, part of the primary blog that I operate. And you'll find that on the Internet. Just do a search for Alex Constantine's Blacklist, and you're on your way.
And again, I'll include a lot of extra links and research for folks to get to your sites as well as your books. We, of course, only really mentioned The Covert War Against Rock, but you've got a few other books also in e-format as well, and articles. And there's, again, man, so many things we didn't talk about. NutraSweet or...
Yep.
So, again, I really appreciate it.
As do I.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say out on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight. Yo.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.